got it. Here we go. Write to us at MyNorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Come on into the state rhythm text line and deep tease again, Tom, that at some point Jacob has to make the producer move. Forgive me. I need to carve out 2 minutes for my difficult night and the new sort of turn not for the better between myself and Dougie. So Jacob did find
at
somewhere.
At least
for
that, 2 minutes.
That little chest and 2 minutes. I'm like, yeah,
we could do a daily plum update.
I guess. Bad night. Didn't get to sleep last night until 12:15. Not like 9 o'clock. In and out. Asleep. And unless Dory calls. And then I'm like, I've never met a man that can talk for an hour and 52 minutes like Dory can. It's like talking like... This
Ooh,
is
going to
sound terribly sexist. That's like high school. High school girls would get on the phone back in the 80s. Yeah? Then what did he say? Oh, my gosh. Do you like him? Are you going to do the prom with him? Are you chasing your hair? Do you have a mood ring? Oh, my God.
Hey, you should record the conversation. I bet that'd be great.
Yeah, just upload it as a podcast. Yeah, everybody loved it.
That's how those podcasts are, basically. Yeah. All right. Denny Park. Beautiful Denny Park, named after one of the founders of Seattle. It's right down the street. It used to be a horrible place. A lot of drug dealing and things. Got cleaned up in the late 80s. Was nice in the 90s for a while there. And it has gone south. Oh, boy. And I don't know how many people are in there that are temporarily experiencing homelessness. Then the city, well, you know what? I'm going to let Kyrie 7 do some of the work.
Complaints of violence and health concerns now have Seattle city crews clearing out Denny Park. You can see caution tape currently canvasses the perimeter of the area. We've got signs showing the park is temporarily closed and SPD is on scene. And we've watched them go through a number of aggressive encounters with people they've removed from the park. Shouting curse words on Denny Way and 9th. We watch some campers react harshly to their removal. Not everyone forced to pack up pushed back. Our cameras captured plenty peacefully hauling their belongings away. Onlookers we spoke with say the city needs a better solution to these sweeps.
So all they do is shove camps around. It's terrible. I'd hate to live like that.
The city of Seattle says it halted encampment removals during COVID, but recent events at Denny Park demanded action. Officials say since November 2020, a staggering 60 911 calls have been linked to the park. Among these, 10 calls for arson, rubbish fires, and illegal burning, 5 for domestic violence, 4 assaults, and 3 sex offenses.
This park was nice, but now, you know, drugs and hookers and needles and... I mean, it's horrible. I'm glad this is happening.
According to the city, outreach work began weeks ago, back on February 17th, after a large fire destroyed tents and burned trees. Officials say shelter has been offered to everyone living there, but that so far, only 2 people have accepted.
Oh, okay. Shelter is not the answer. That's not what they want. I always like how they slip those man on the street things in there, right, Tom?
Yes. Well, it's to flesh out a report. It gives it a.
I wouldn't want to live there. All right. I guess the only reason this thing is making news is because the cops are not going in on this. They're going to send. Yes. I guess someone else is going to have to deal with the spitting, screaming, violent people that they're going to have to kick out. So it won't be the police. It used to be the navigation team was police, and then people called the navigation team. The police would stand back there and kind of watch.
Yeah.
Social workers move in, and then if things got dangerous or whatever, because there was a lot of crime, the police would step in. In this case, no cops, Tom. There's no cops involved.
Well,
you just pick up your tent and move. You're not going to listen
so
to these
far,
people.
Well, yeah. So this is – the Seattle Times has this Project Homeless. It's sort of like their education lab where they keep track of these kinds of things. And according to this, the article about this – this is kind of an experiment. Now, there are people, just to kind of set the stage, there are people like King Equity now, they're opposed to all sweeps, right?
So yes, right.
During the pandemic, the city has a kind of, or the state, whomever has jurisdiction, the county, they have kind of an umbrella to use the CDC guidelines that say, listen, during the pandemic, moving homeless encampments probably is worse for society than not because of the possible spread. So there's that camp. But there is an effort at trying to undermine the most negative components of these sweeps by having the cops have no presence or little presence. The city council does not like that, as the majority of the city council do not like these kinds of encampment removals. The mayor tends to be more in favor of them. And so what they're trying now is they gutted the payment for the money for the navigation teams, the city council did. And so now what the city is kind of slyly doing, that's what the thrust of this article is they're seeing if they can do it without the a police presence. Now, that doesn't mean the police might not be called in. In fact, in the article, they do say they're kind of like on standby. If something south goes, goes south, they could still show up. But it seems to me more successful than not in that there used to be as many as 70 tents there. And because of this effort at trying to move people along, they're now down to 20 as of today or yesterday. And so the hope is that maybe those last few will go. In fact, Seattle Times talks to two people there, and they may not be typical of the 20 that are left, but they said, yeah, you know, I think that's just as well. We moved in here a couple of months ago, and things were tidy. We kept things up, but somebody stole a generator, and then this went south. And he says, now this place is a pigsty, and we agree. We we think we should go somewhere else.
We'll go somewhere else, and then we'll keep it as clean as we possibly can. Then someone else will move in, and they'll litter it all up, and they'll steal stuff, and they'll rape people, and they'll rob, and they'll set things on fire. And then the city will come in, and we'll move to the next place. Or what a lot will do is they wait, they move, they gather up all their stuff, they wait till, okay, is it gone? And then they go back again and set their stuff back up. The fact that only two out of the 70 happens all over. Like two out of the 70 seek shelter. Whether they actually go and get shelter or not, that's another story. But, Tom, you see it. Green Lake, are they still hanging all around Green Lake like they used to, or they moved out of there and moved over to Ballard? Ballard's a really prime spot if you want to just be able to live the way you want to live and not care about anybody else that's around you.
They are scattered. Now, I know that this is mostly a downbeat story, but I think in the Seattle Times profile, they did mention that at least initially there were a lot of Native American homeless people there at Denny Park. And because of federal funds, most of them moved out into hotel rooms with federal funding. And so that alleviated, you know, some of the stress. Now, unfortunately, as you mentioned, people then moved in to take over the spot. But there has been some help for some of the homeless landing a spot during a pandemic in hotel rooms.
Well, the good news is eventually we will have less and less homeless because we will have less and less people. That the United States, not just the United States, but the world itself will hit its peak population by 63. I have it happening December 63, but if you want to go into February 64, somewhere right in there, set your watches by it, everybody. We hit out at about 9 billion of us, and then we slip back down a little bit into a more manageable, like 8.8 billion. And that is the fact that there will be less and less of us. And maybe we get there even sooner because kids aren't getting it on like they used to, Tom.
Okay, now wait a minute. You're combining a couple of stories.
In order to have more people, you got to get it on. And apparently people aren't getting it on like they used to.
That's right. Okay, so let's just quickly deal with the population boom. The reason that we're talking about that is because word just came out in this big study that the baby boom that was expected to be arriving because of the pandemic, everyone stuck at home, to relieve the stress, they might get a little more romantic than normal. Turns out not to be the case. We're at the nine-month point now, and they say that there's been a baby bust, 7% drop in births in December. So the significance of that is that, okay, that just continues a trend that we've had around the world. And I found it interesting. I didn't realize. I understand the United States, most westernized countries, there's been a falling birth rate, given that people are getting married later and all of this, that there is some reason for that. The concern, however, is if the entire globe, which seems to be peaking, as we mentioned, in 2064, which surprised me, that there won't be enough young people to support all the old people.
Oh.
Now, it's probably not going to help hurt our generation, John. There's still the millennial generation is big enough, I think, to you know, pay for our needs as we enter our twilight years. But for their generation, there may not be enough people to come along. So now,
and that
why
is
are
the
people
problem.
Having... Oh, go ahead.
Right. But it's just real quick, here's the Jacob pulled all this sound, and it is the lack of new babies a bad
We are on the precipice, at the very least, of not having enough children to replace our population.
And
this is your problem.
So what? I mean,
well, that's the interesting
that's the question.
Yeah.
Right?
Laura Lindberg tracks reproductive data for the Guttmacher Institute. And while she's also seeing the baby bust, she views it as a sign of progress, a marker of women's equality and freedom of choice.
So it's a shift to later in life. In that shift comes more education, more career, more employment. So it's a reordering of how people engage in adulthood.
There you go. And then finally, what is the cause of this, Tom? I'm sure you want to know the cause.
Did you ever think in your lifetime you'd be talking about a declining birth rate globally?
No.
So what changed?
The burdens of life, the cost of housing, the cost of education, all these things have become more and more difficult. I think the boomers themselves don't realize it, how much harder it is for millennials today. And they think, oh, yeah, when we were young, we had to live, you know, on very little money, and we made do, and you can do the same. That's the story, right? Well, no, it really is a lot harder for the young people today. It's amazing how much harder it is.
Yeah, I would agree that college is more expensive. They go in with more debt. I would also say for that education, you can look at across the world, that as people become more educated, they put off having children later, plus they also have less children. So when you have less children, you move more away from a patriarchal society where the guy basically says to the woman, by the way, you're going to keep having kids until we don't have a room for any more kids, 7, 8, 9, 10 kids. That woman doesn't have a chance to really fully bloom as an individual because she is just basically a money or a baby-making machine for, you know, the first, I don't know, 15 years of her life. And this has been happening, you know, throughout Muslim communities where I think the average is 7 kids per one woman. And as education increases, there's less and less children. Now, how do you break from that culture? I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but overall, you are seeing a decline in other places. Italy is at zero or in the negative, right, Tom? And I think Sweden and Denmark, all of them,
westernized
in fact,
countries.
Of those countries said, let's have a PSA, public service announcement, and give one of them, let's pay people to go home in the afternoon during work time to have sex. I don't know if it was one of the Scandinavian countries that your boss would let you go home so you could get it on and then you'd come back again because we desperately need people to have kids.
that's actually been the argument. They want to encourage that. That's also the case in Japan. Apparently they have an elderly generation of people that are far outweigh the up-and-comers, and that's a concern for society.
It's not going to be the next generation, which is Generation Z, Tom. Gen Z.
That's right.
You're not going to be able to have kids because girls like girls and guys like guys, and then guys don't know if they're girls or guys. 1 out of 6, they say. This is Gen Z. I don't know what year they were born. 1 out of 7 adults... Or 1 out of 6 from Gen Z say they are LGBT in that one of those letters in the alphabet.
LGBTQ. This is how you nicely fuse the two stories. Or maybe we should give Jacob, who produced the show this today.
No.
The 1 in 6 generation. 1 in 6. And if you are LGBT, then... your argument is that fewer of them might have children. Now, obviously, a lot of lesbian couples and you know, gay men couples, you can get married and you can raise kids the like. But still, this is a high percentage, the highest that we've ever recognized. Not to say that there weren't this many people in the past. It's just that they haven't been out. They haven't made themselves public. But they figured that about 5.6% of U.S. adults identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. And that's up from 4.5% just a couple of years ago. So it's still you know, only 5.6% of the population at this point. But yes, I would assume, although I don't know this for a fact, I would assume that gay couples probably have fewer children than heterosexual couples.
You think? Well, but the fact that one out of six Gen Z identifies as something other than heterosexual.
Yes.
I don't know what this attributes to. There was a University of Brown professor who had came up with a paper about spontaneous gender dysphoria, saying that there's no sign that the kid shows any sign of gender dysphoria, but then all of a sudden at the age of 16 or 17, suddenly it's a sudden onset of it. So this Brown University professor did this paper on it and said, isn't it interesting? She talked to a whole bunch of different parents. And her theory, which, by the way, Brown had to take off the website immediately, her theory was is that women, in order to, it's an assimilation almost, where people go, well, I'm gay or I'm bi, and then someone else says, well, I'm confused as well, so then maybe I'm trans. So then it's sort of this thing where everybody has something that they're sort of reaching for and grabbing for, because then they found, she followed the parents, and a couple of years later, many of them reoriented back towards heterosexual, normal, you know, relationships. So her theory was is that when you get teenagers and they're all sort of, you know, grasping for whatever they are or want to be, you get more attention in groups. If you're gay or bi, you get like, you know, a couple of points. But if you say you're trans, it's so much more interesting as an individual. You get more attention, more affirmation. And this is sort of part of this theory of, because no one knows why it suddenly happens.
Okay.
It was just something that she had put out there.
I'd be careful about the use of the word normal, but the thing about transgender, what I know is that if you're transgendered, you have more troubles in society, not fewer. I think this idea that somehow that's cool now is far outweighed by whatever upset you cause in the general community that you are then the victim of. But you're right. I think
No.
Okay.
What she was saying was is that parents that are dealing with kids that are transgender begin to demonstrate those characteristics at 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, right in there. She was talking to these parents, and they said no indication at all of any of that until 17, 18, 19. And she said, so why was this? So she came up with this thing called spontaneous gender dysphoria, and then she was trying to, you know, put together research to explain why it might be happening. So that was something that was out there. But the trans community jumped all over Brown University and made them take it off their website and deny it, I think about a week after it got out there. So that's how science works now. All right. Tracy
Taylor.
By the
way, just so people know, 50% of the Gen Zs who identify as LGBTQ, 50% of them claim to be bisexual.
Ah, there you go.
They're not giving up.
That ups your odds. Down. Ups your odds. Yeah. Yep. All right, Tracy.
Hey, is Lou early today, John?
I guess it is early. It's 4:35. I haven't let her out because, again, this is the problem from last night. All right. Let me just say that if there is a market for something, somebody will fill the market. So if somebody wants to jump on a plane and fly all the way to Saudi Arabia to get a vaccine, Tom, right? Isn't that just the market moving in, whether it's black market or any market? The market will always find someone, especially when it comes to Muckle Sheep Casino. They know that if you're in the market for fun and good times, I'll tell you, I hadn't had lunch yet. And when I heard that Rachel Bell spot about all the good food, the beer battered halibut and all the different foods there at Muckleshoot, I was like, stop, Rachel, you're killing me over here, you know, huh?
Because now you're a total food guy. It's your new thing. No longer are you squishing pasta together into a ball and rolling it in rosemary. You're cooking food and eating beer battered cod. I can't hardly speak over here. I'm so shocked.
Yes, you are all verklempt. All right. So this does not seem like a story when Jacob dangles these stories out in front of you like a hungry fish, like a cod beer battered over at Muckleshoot Casino. I would always think this would be one you would pass on and wait for something
really?
Else. But yet, you bit on this one. Yes.
Yeah, I did. I did bite on this one. I feel like this is a Rachel Bell story to the core. So the start of this has you know, the same kind of vibe that we've talked about before. The fact that women do more housework than men do. We've discussed this. Procter & Gamble did a survey in December. There's been many surveys, but this one involves 1,600 adults. And 63% of women surveyed said they are mainly responsible for household chores. Only 31% of men said that they are. But the funny thing is, despite 31% of men saying they did most of the chores, only 2% of women agreed with them. But anyway, that women. Is the buildup. Women. Am I right? The worst. Mars, Venus, and all that. So because men and women have been fighting over this, actually some cleaning companies decided to capitalize on this, and they're actually designing products to get, quote, the whole family. But what they mean is you dirty, rotten men involved in cleaning. So specifically, Dawn dish soap and Swiffer dusters started a campaign last month that urges customers to, quote, come clean to close the chore gap. So they invented something called Dawn Power Wash, which D-A-W-N, it sounds like a drag name to me. Like, this is like a drag queen who loves to clean. I'm Dawn Power Wash. And what it is this like little scrubby thing on a stick, and it shoots sudsy dish soap from a spray nozzle. So this was developed in the first place because they decided that people really like to spray soap on every single dish. But a year after the launch, Procter & Gamble found that actually the novelty of shooting soap especially appealed to men. They also said men showed more volunteerism to wash dishes. And so now they are marketing this product to men to try to get them to clean more because, hey, it's fun. You get to shoot stuff. The second thing is the Swiffer mop, which I think most people know, that you kind of attach this little disposable pad to the bottom. And then when you're done, you can look at all of the dirt that you picked up after mopping. And internally at Procter & Gamble, they call this the scorecard because it says cleaning newbies really like to look at this. I don't know. I'm not a newbie. I love seeing the dirt that I pick up. I love those infomercials where there's spills on the carpet and you see the side by side with cleaning. Oh, yeah. So also they say men love that scorecard. So they're also starting to market this to men as well. And then before we talk about it, on the opposite spectrum, yard work is predominantly a male chore, 75% a male, 25% female. And this kind of bugs me because we've just heard that women are doing most of the housework. But now this company, Briggs & Stratton, is like, whoa, we got to get the gals out there. If they're not out, you know, what are we going to do? So they're making lightweight mowers, chainsaws, and trimmers that also have quieter engines, which is fine. I totally am in support of making these items that people might like to use. But the idea of saying like, oh, we got to get women out there because women in this study said the reason they are not doing the lawn is because they're so busy doing the dishes and washing the clothes.
Come so, on.
But I had this terrible realization while I was reading this article that my mom did all of the above. My mom did all of the mowing and all of the yard work and all of the inside work. And she was not a single mother.
Wow.
And she
where
had
was your
kids.
Father in all this? Yeah, where was your dad in all this?
He was at work. He was an engineer. You know, he was a rocket scientist. And my dad would say, I don't know if it's because he is a man or because he is foreign and has those values, but he said to my mom, you don't work and I go to work, so you do all this stuff at home. Mm. Classic. Classic cool dad.
So, Rachel, I think that this is a great effort. I mean, not enough men probably do household chores. And so if this can trick men into doing more, I guess that's a great idea. But you, I'm wondering about you. Would you be more apt to do outdoor work? I mean, do you have a hankering for, oh, I'd be happy to mow the lawn or trim the hedges or whatever if only I had lighter equipment. Does that have any appeal to you?
Well, honestly, I've never had a lawn as an adult, so I've never worked with any of that equipment to know if it's heavy. But that kind of chore sounds really fun to me. And actually, as a kid, I would beg my mom to mow the lawn, and she would say no, because my mom is such a perfectionist with cleaning that she wouldn't actually delegate to us because she felt like it would be more work for her because she'd have to go back over it and do it again.
Wow.
So to this day, I still crave a lawn mow, and I want to be Edward Scissorhands, and I want to take the trimmer, and I want to do bonsai. It looks so fun.
Okay, John, what would it take you to do the dishes or clean the bathroom?
I did the dishes. I always did that stuff.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, always. Equal 50-50 on that. You like the other person
Yeah, if you don't take the garbage out, what are you going to wait for somebody else to take it out? The same thing is cleaning was just part of the regular routine. When the kids were really, really young, and I would do a thing called turbo clean. We had this big house, and I would get so sick of all the junk, like broken toys, all this other stuff, and Lace would yell out, guys, look out, Dad is going to do a turbo clean. It wasn't necessarily my best state of mind at this point, and I would get a gigantic bag, bigger than a 50-gallon bag. I don't know what you'd put in this thing, like a whale carcass, and it was great big, and I would just run around the house and collect anything I found on the floor and throw it in the bag and then throw it in the garbage. And the kids would be screaming, crying, running in front of me. No, no, not Pinga.
You would not be a good mall Pinga. Santa.
Not Pinga. And I'm like, Pinga's in the bag. And then Lace would say, okay, hold on a second. Okay, they're allowed to go into the garage and go through the bags and Pinga was Charlie's doll, and find the stuff that you have picked up in the turbo clean. I said, that's fine, as long as it's off the floor. It's got to be off the floor, off the counter, off of everything. And then it would go out into the garage, and they would be going through the bag. No, here's my airplane.
And like, that's why
I don't care.
That's why the dumpster dive to this day.
That's right. But when the turbo clean was happening, you don't want to get, you could get behind
that's
it, but
funny.
You don't
like
look
it.
Out. Oh, yeah, I was insane. Just everything's got to go. All got to go.
Well, if I ever get another pet, I'm going to name it Pinga. It's a pretty good name.
Pinga,
I like
Punga,
it.
Ponga. It was European. Pinga, Ponga, Punga, and Wine. Those were the four the names of the four babies.
It sounds like an indie band.
Pinga, Ponga, Punga, and Wine. She just sort of ran out of P names, and then she threw the word wine in there because that's what her mom is.
Because she's a real
drink.
Wine lady. Her other car is a wine.
All right,
she's
Arbel.
She's all day.
Arbel, are you in tomorrow?
I sure am. Bright and early, but also at 4:30 p.m.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Arbel. Appreciate it.
Bye, Rach.
There she goes. Tracy Taylor, what's going on out there? Writing to us at mynorthwest.com, texting as well at 98973. It's a state route from text line. It's a good thing for you to do. And now, calling an audible, Tom.
Yes.
News from the club. Just very, very upsetting last night. Lou disappeared for a little bit. I normally let her out. She wanders around and comes back.
Yeah.
And she comes back, and I click, 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 a little clicky thing, and I go click, 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 click. I click it, and then she comes running. She comes running in, and I say, we go back outside again, take a walk. So we go back out, and we get to the end of the driveway, and there is a giant black dead chicken, which she has obviously brought home from Dougie's house.
Oh.
And he warned me when I first moved in, couple things you need to do. Don't let that dog start eating chicken. Once that dog gets a taste of chicken, then you're in a lot of trouble. That if you would like to repeat that, you need to put an F-bomb in between every other word. But basically, he said, once that happens, you got a big problem. That dog's going to get shot. No one wants a dog eating chicken around, because a lot of people around here have chickens. And once they see that dog on the property, they're going to shoot that dog. You're going to lose that dog. Dog's going to die, so don't let Lou start eating chicken, because once she tastes chicken, it's all over. So I see the chicken. I see her. I do the classic stupid move, which is, you know, the dog poops on the rug. You stick the dog's face in it or whatever. No, no, don't do that. So I'm going, no, no. I'm holding her down next to this gross, disgusting, dead chicken. Mm-hmm. And she's looking up at me like, what? What did I do? She takes off, runs, gets under the car, back to the cabin. I can't get her out from underneath the car. I'm trying to get her to come out, but she's so afraid of me because who knows what happened in her other life, but she is totally freaked out. I go reach in to get her. She takes off again. I can't find her for almost an hour and a half. I don't know where she is. It's dark. There's coyotes everywhere. And I don't know where she is. And I'm, Lou, please come back. And I just assume she can see me. So I'm doing like a Disney scene. I'm sitting on the snow and on the ground. Lou, please. And I'm clicking my little clicker, trying to get her to come back. She's nowhere to be found. And then I thought, I know where she is. She's back up at the scene of the crime. So I called Dougie at 8:30 at night. And I, Doug, What? What do you want? I go, because he goes to bed early and he has a sleep apnea problem. What do you want? I said, I'm so sorry. Lou got one of your chickens. Huh? And I think she's at your back door. Now, she's very skittish because I yelled at her. So just can you just reach out there? She's right at your. I can see her from where I am. I'm at the end of the driveway. I can see her. Can you just open the door and just hold on to her and I'll come get her because she's really skittish. Okay. Yeah. All right. And I see the lights come on the cabin and then all of a sudden the lights, big lights outside. And he stands up and goes, I don't want to yell loud because it'll freak her out. But basically, go the F home! Screaming at her. And that doesn't, she's traumatized. You yelling at her wasn't going to be the thing. So then she takes off somewhere else. And then in the morning, I said, I write him a very long letter explaining how terrible I feel about the chicken and how do I make amends for the lost chicken and how do I stop him, Lou, from eating chickens. You know what everybody says to do? Take the dead chicken, tie it around her neck, and let her drag it around for 2 weeks.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, when you live in a 365-foot square cabin, your dog coming into the cabin dragging a badly decomposing chicken around is not... I mean, that might work for dogs that live outside. They're like, oh, hey there, Skippy, what are you doing? Oh, what's that? You got a friend dragging behind you with a bunch of flies and maggots and stuff? Ah, come on into my bed. I mean,
well, Lou's owner needs to learn the lesson, too, so I think that's only fitting.
Oh, I drag one around, too, around my neck?
No. You allow the dog with the decaying thing around its neck in your home. That'll teach you both a lesson.
I would do that if I had a sponsor that was for, hi, everybody, if you've got a dog with a decaying chicken around its neck.
It works, though. It really does.
How do you know that? Tracy, really? Does it really work?
Yes, it truly works. I spent my summers on my grandpa's farm. It works. But I wouldn't do it for 2 weeks. I would do it for like 4 days. 4 days is good.
Okay.
Yeah, 4 days. But it truly works. They will never touch another chicken again.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yep. My grandpa's dog used to get into the chicken hen house all the time, and he would kill multiple chickens, and that finally stopped him.
Wow. By dragging dead chickens behind him. So four days of it?
4 days. You got to tie it around his neck or her neck.
How, like right up under the neck or like let
like
it drag
right
behind
up under
you?
The neck. Like, right up under the neck.
Oh. Sounds like Clockwork Orange.
I know. It'll be gross and it'll stink in your place for a while, but it will
thank you, Tracy Taylor.
Only in the club.
Yeah, only in the club will you find that. Okay, guys.